Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourselves up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march or demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marches, they never change anything.
Out to move, come out. Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And Mess Ronnie saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad, Cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Friends, it is time once again for our daily message of hope. And with today's message, here is Richard Eaton.
Friends, to brighten your day, here is our message of hope.
A man who taught many wonderful truths about life once said, "Make the most of your present opportunities. Make the most of your present opportunities." Let me repeat once again. Make the most of your present opportunities. And the longer I live, the more convinced I am this is a wonderful piece of advice. Appreciate the present before it becomes the past. Make the most of your present opportunities. So many of us waste our present time worrying about the past or the future. And actually, we can do nothing about either the past or the future. Little sympathy or patience should be wasted on the person who is eternally crying for the good old days, or bemoaning that things aren't as they used to be. Naturally, they aren't. Time changes all things, as it is changing you right now. And were it not for change, there could be no progress in this world of ours. Probably a good bit of advice to all of us would be to live every moment as it comes to us, just as though it were the only one we had on earth. To appreciate the present before it becomes the past. Let your life be filled now with love, with happiness, with harmony, with courage, with faith. Too many of us are wasting energy trying to relive the past. And we are putting off our good from day to day, from month to month, and from year to year, so that we never quite catch up with it. Why not live now? Forget the troubles of the past and stop dreading the future. The expression of our powers and abilities is governed by our thoughts. If our thoughts are dwelling in the past or in the future, our power and abilities will be lessened in the present, because they will be trying to follow our thoughts to realms that do not exist. We need all our abilities right now in the present moment. We cannot afford to dissipate them by letting our mind dwell on the past or by worrying about the future. If we live rightly every present moment, we shall have no occasion to mourn over the past. What does it really matter today, what happened yesterday, or some other day in the past? It is beyond our recall, so it is not worth the effort of worrying about it. Dr. Frank Crane expressed a bit of good philosophy on this matter in his short article called The Past. Says Dr. Crane, a good deal of morbid nonsense has been said and written and thought about the past. The past is irrevocable. We have been told in sermon and story, you cannot escape the past. The past can never be changed. And so on and so on. The whole trend of this thought being that the past is a kind of a Sherlock Holmes, dogging our steps forever, a sinister nemesis, waiting its chance to strike us down, the account book of an angry God, sure to confront us someday. All of this is morbid. Most of it is dramatic. The underlying sentiment of it is false, weakening, and septic. As a matter of fact, our past, as Maeterlinck puts it so well, depends on our present and changes with it. Our past depends on our present and changes with it. What the past is depends upon the way you are now using it. Its effect upon your destiny will be gauged by how you translate it into the future. If we brood over the past and weaken ourselves with vain regret, with self-contempt and remorse, then that past will poison and undo us in the present. But no matter what the past contains of our sin or folly, we can, by a right use of it now, make it minister to our welfare. First of all, we can learn wisdom from the past. By it, we can realize our faults to be corrected and our offenses to be atoned for. And with this wisdom, we can go on to better things. The only true repentance is so to use the past as to enable us to build a better future. Weeping and wailing and brooding, those are the luxuries of morbidity. The past is beneath our feet. We can go down into it and wallow in impotent grief, or we can step upon that past to higher things. The great enemy of life is despair. The great friend is hope. Despair paralyzes, ruins. Hope energizes, for we are saved by hope. Face the future. Whatever the past has been, let it nerve you to spend your remaining days in faithfulness and loyalty to your better self. These are the words of Dr. Frank Crane, and I feel he certainly has the right view. Be concerned about your past only to the extent that it can teach you. The mistakes and sorrows of yesterday belong to yesterday. Yesterday provided sufficient time in which to consider its woes. Most of the worries, the griefs, the heartaches that we suffer are nothing more or less than memory of the troubles and hurts that we experienced some time in the past. If we could only remember that sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. Moffat renders this passage as a day's own trouble is quite enough for the day. And when you stop to think of it, isn't this true? We can readily understand from this that the miseries or woes of yesterday can enter today or tomorrow only through our memory. Before the end of yesterday, we should have put out of mind every disturbing thought caused by yesterday's situations. Those were yesterday's problems, so let them, along with yesterday, pass from sight and from memory. Let not the sun go down from your wrath is a mighty good bit of advice, or so it seems to me. We should not let the day close with our mind disturbed. It is too late to do anything about the way we let yesterday close. But we can do something about the way we let today close. Let us set today free in order that we may meet tomorrow, another new day, fresh and clean and unused, in the right spirit. Our wrath, mental disturbance, and physical miseries of yesterday have no place in our today. They only serve to crowd out the joys and blessings that are in store for us today. Each new day, a new world will begin for us if we do not carry into it the woes of yesterday. If we have not forgotten the woes of yesterday, we do not really experience a new day. To us, the day is just an extension of yesterday. When we let yesterday's sun go down, finding us wrathful and disturbed in mind, we are not obeying the biblical injunction to forget our miseries. We are not approaching the new day with a clear mind and a clean heart. The wisely given command to forget is a provision for our happiness. Were we to remember all our mistakes of the past, we should not have time to think of the good we want. Thou shalt forget thy misery. What shall we forget? What does the misery include? What comes under the category of wrath of mind? Everything not founded upon God or good and truth. It was meant that we should enjoy today to the exclusion of the wraths and miseries of yesterday. We are not to let one little rankling thought of yesterday sully the purity and beauty of today. You know, friends, the sleep that God gives us at night is but a form of his power to help us forget. Sleep is a vestibule through which we pass from one day to the next. We are to shed all our useless thoughts before we approach the next day. What of the wrongs that someone had committed against us yesterday or some other day? What of our jealousies and suspicions? What of the things we secretly accuse ourselves of? All these must go. We must forget them. They belong to the dream or nightmare of the past in which we have awakened to a new day. Are you willing to obey the command, "Thou shalt forget thy miseries"? You alone can decide. You alone can reap the benefits of forgetting. You alone can decide whether you will spoil this new day, fresh and clean and unused, by harboring the adverse thoughts of yesterday. You alone can decide whether you will today remain in the wrathful state of mind of yesterday, or whether you will make the most of your present opportunities. The things of yesterday brought to your mind, which caused you to be disturbed, are quite insignificant today. Forget them. Learn to wipe from mind every thought that works against your highest good. Enjoy today to the fullest. You can do this only by approaching it with a clear mind, receptive to the good in store for you. Let each new day begin life anew for you, rather than being merely an extension of yesterday. Start out this morning by obeying the command to forget. Make up your mind you are not going to try to carry yesterday along into this brand new day. Erase from your mind any sense of blame, any memory of failure, all sorts of wrongs of the past. Was it not Ruskin who said, "Let every dawn of morning be to you as the beginning of life, and every setting sun be to you as its close. Then let every one of these short lives leave its sure record of some kindly thing done for others, some goodly strength or knowledge gained for yourself. Let me repeat, let every dawn of morning be to you as the beginning of life, and every setting sun be to you as its close. Then let every one of these short lives leave its sure record of some kindly thing done for others, some goodly strength or knowledge gained for yourselves. It behooves all of us to live in the present in the way that will make of our future that which we wish our present were now. Yes, friends, it's up to us. We can go down into and wallow in impotent grief, or we can step upon the past to higher things. It is up to us. And so, friends, you've been listening once again to our message of hope. God bless you, everyone.
Listen again tomorrow, friends, for another message of hope with Richard Easton. This is UBC, the United Broadcasting Company. Friends, it is time once again for our daily message of hope. And with today's message, here is Richard Eaton.
Friends, to brighten your day, here is our message of hope. It's amazing. But everything in this world changes except God's basic laws. And His laws are unchangeable. They serve as an infallible guide to meet every crisis, every change in life. If we can rise sufficiently out of the rut into which any situation or circumstance has pushed us and apply the same basic laws to our particular situation as preceding generations have used, we'll find the same result. God's laws never change. Everything in this world changes except God's basic laws. For example, as a man thinketh, so is he. An understanding heart is the most precious of earthly possessions. Man is master of his mind, and hence master of all circumstances. These laws have always been basic. They're just as true now as 2,000 years ago, or even 5,000 years ago. God never abandons us, even though, as the 23rd Psalm so clearly assures us, we may walk in the valley of death. He provides the strength He knows is necessary for us whenever we need it. Such are fundamental laws which apply to every situation, terrifying or not. Everything in life has a purpose. We may wonder sometimes what purpose some misfortune can have, but every event has its role in the growth of the human soul. Sometimes the purpose is not revealed for years, or if we fail to exert the strength God gave us, perhaps is never known to us during our passage on earth. But nevertheless, everything that happens to each of us has its share in the growth of our soul. No matter how unpleasant any situation may appear, how far removed at first sight from any seeming possibility for good, this fact remains. What happens to each of us is part of the Creator's divine plan. And how we react is the privilege which God has given us. The way we react represents the freedom extended to each of us by God. No intelligent human can fail to take hope, watching the intricate mechanism of life, with each minute's experience fitting perfectly into the overall life pattern. A bee buzzes as her path crosses a little too closely our own. A bird chirps a cheery call to its mate. A spider spins its web. These phenomena, in fact,
everything in life have their particular reasons. When it rains in our lives, it is because we need the rain in order to enjoy the sunshine and reap rich harvests. The way we meet all these phenomena, the way we master life, is our liberty of choice, mercifully granted by the Creator. The effect of every cause depends upon our reaction. Our soul grows as we overcome the trials and appreciate life's beauties and happy interludes. Oh yes, we can give vent to hatred and intolerance or despair, or we can deny these emotions which blind us to love and beauty and truth. And then we may acquire understanding instead of always seeking to have others understand us. No man can antedate his experience or guess what faculty or feeling a new object shall unlock, any more than he can draw today the face of a person he shall see tomorrow for the first time. So wrote Ralph Waldo Emerson. And it's true, we're constantly learning new lessons. Often we find that what we have learned is that which we have failed to appreciate and to understand. Maturity often comes too late for us to profit by the lessons we should have learned earlier, but never too late for each of us to try to pass on to those who follow the lessons we finally understand. Life is a process of continual change and development as well as growth. But God's laws are never changing. To be happy, to make our lives satisfying, we must be flexible enough in mind and body and consciousness to accept changes when they come. Don't stubbornly resist all changes in your life and affairs. Make these changes yield the harvest of good that potentially lies in each one of us. This may be difficult, but let me tell you, you can do it if you will. You, as a matter of fact, and only you, can determine whether you are to be bowed down, crushed, steamrollered by the events of life, or overcome them and come out triumphant, a happy individual. That's your right if you apply God's basic laws. No matter how drastic changes in your life may seem, in your occupation, your place or mode of living, in your surrounding or associations or activities, or anything that concerns you, good is in this change for you. If you search hard enough to find it and accept it and make it your own by your reaction, by your adaptation to this change, scenes and times and circumstances all come and go. But God is eternal and unchanging, and so is his law. His good is unfailing. What each of us needs is the deep personal conviction that this good exists in every circumstance. Then, no matter what may come, we can remain poised and serene, free from fear. When we are aware of and exercise the tremendous power of our minds to dominate circumstances, overcome obstacles and snags, a peaceful, contented, and satisfying life is within our grasp. You know, actually, we're really not alive except when fighting the perils that threaten the mind and soul. Life is a challenge, a wonderful challenge, a wonderful adventure. When there is no struggle, life degenerates into vegetable-like existence, inert, torpid, and decadent. It is the challenge of peril, physical, mental, or spiritual, that makes life vigorous and can make it triumphant. There are inevitable moments of our lives when a storm is as certain and as necessary as storms in the skies. There are other moments in which life's elements combine to give us a serene, perfect moment, when sun and temperature make the day electrically beautiful. We cannot prevent these extreme highs and lows that temper our soul, make them grow. We can only do our best and never relax our faith in God's mercy. Whatever experiences we meet on life's course, in order for our minds and souls to attain maximum growth, we must always hold firmly in mind life's basic analysis. And what is this? Well, life is composed of two parts. Keep this always in mind. Life is composed of two parts. The first part, beyond our individual control. Events, circumstances, situations, problems. The second part, the part we can control, our reaction. The experiences we cannot control in no way prevent or limit our choice of reaction to these same experiences. Thus, in the end, our reactions, the second part of life, is much more important than any experience or situation or problem. Imagine an ocean dotted with coral islands, some small and some large, and washed by rising and outgoing tides. There you see a graphic illustration of our lives. The islands are the experiences we cannot avoid, the situations which sweep us away with joy or with sorrow, with happiness or anxiety. Before any man's life story is fully written, he must move from many of these coral islands to others. We cannot choose our individual islands of experience, but like the tide that flows against them, we can roll triumphantly over the coral rock, or we can break in many pieces. The way we move from one island of experience to another is ours to choose. Destiny provides the experiences we meet. We exert our own reactions. Do we wonder why life appears difficult at times? Do we wonder why there exists such reckless disregard for God's laws? Do we wonder why what seems evil appears to rage rampant in the world? We need not and should not be disheartened. There is no living thing in the world, plant or tree, fish or fowl, protoplasm or human being, without a place, a particular place, in the Creator's perfect plan. It is not necessary for each big or little entity endowed with life to be conscious of its own mission. It is sufficient to know there is no life, no spark of life without a purpose, no death without its role in the drama of life. Study the physical body. The answers to life's spiritual and intellectual cycles are clearly shown each day for our enlightenment. The body's marvels show how clearly sorrow and joy, pain and pleasure transform into part of a picture of growth. We begin our life in strife and struggle as we are born, and these conflicts continue until physical death. So sometimes you may feel that your load in life is too heavy for you to carry, that it is weightier than your strength and endurance can bear. Readjust your thinking. The strange thing about your load is it doesn't really bear down on your shoulders. It actually lifts you upwards. Imagine a load which lifts you upward. The life without a load is a life that goes down in defeat. Hear the fable of the small boy who read the story of Atlas, the titan who carried the world on his shoulders. The little boy imagined at first that Atlas must have been almost crushed under the weight of the world. But later, the youngster began to think in terms of Atlas's enormous strength. Only then did he begin to see that heavy loads must be wings that lift instead of crushing burdens. The small boy perhaps did not realize it, but growth was taking place within him. Soon, the conscious physical reaction of the boy to his thought processes had him lifting the biggest stones he could find and carry. He tugged at paving stones and heavy wooden blocks, simply to pit his strength against them. And just like the boy, as we go through life, we learn no one can be really happy unless he carries a load. A human being fully lives only as he lifts. Friends, you've been listening once again to our message of hope. God bless you, everyone.
Listen again tomorrow, friends, for another message of hope with Richard Eaton. This is UBC, the United.
Before I get started with this video, I just want to personally thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon, which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others, because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word because, as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back telling the bald-headed brother that he's hungry as fuck. When the brother attempts to hand him his own fishing rod so he can get some fish on his own, he gets verbally assaulted. No, nigga, I want some fish. Fuck out of here with that coon shit. Man, if you look closer, you'll see that the brother that says he's hungry got a fresh pair of Jordans on his feet. And once again, I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing that photo because it is a perfect warm-up for what I'm getting ready to bring up next. Look, last week, I had to stop past a gas station, and when I went in, I took a quick glance over to the newsstand, and I saw the Washington Post. The first thing that caught my eye was something that you normally don't see on the cover of a newspaper, which was a few straggling pants sagging brothers sitting on a stoop of a building outside. I didn't have the time to read the paper in the gas station because I had to fly, but I checked the article online when I got home, and I was just flabbergasted. I want you all to check it out for yourself in the description box. It is the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, and the front cover story is a look back at the riots which took place in Baltimore this past April following the death of Freddie Gray. The Post took the time to interview a few of the residents and get their personal take on how things have been and has any positive change come to the streets of Baltimore after the riots. And one of the brothers that they interviewed was a young man that was out there on the streets peddling drugs from time to time, and he stated that he ended up finding out shortly after the riots that there were a few storefront apartments that were up for sale and that they were only selling for just $5,000 a piece. He then said that when he ran the idea of getting together and investing in the neighborhood past several brothers that he was out there selling drugs with on the streets, all of them told him no. And see, this goes to what brothers like myself, Sean James, and many others who are right here on YouTube have been telling y'all about this modern Negro. Okay, this Baltimore brother that was interviewed by the Washington Post had a great idea and the right frame of mind to purchase this storefront property while the price is extremely low. But the rest of the Negroes that are around him.
Okay, I had to get out of another conversation here. Today's podcast, we can go train topics, anything that you guys want to talk about. But what I have here is I got this idea about 1 o'clock this morning, midnight, 1 o'clock a.m. this morning, based on a friend of mine brought up the TV show Pimp My Ride. And if you're not familiar with that TV show Pimp My Ride, essentially it was on MTV. You can probably watch episodes of it on YouTube for free. But Pimp My Ride, the idea of it was they had this rapper, his name was, the primary one was Exhibit. And Exhibit would go knocking on somebody's door, and it'll be a person who has a car, some type of vehicle, mostly a car or maybe a van, but most of the times, 9 times out of 10, it was a car, that was broken down. It needed work. It was jalopy looking. What do you call those things? Well, anyway, a car that needed some work. You can call it a jalopy. Man, I forgot what they call those things. Anyway, so the rapper Exhibit would go knocking on the door, and I'm here to pimp your ride. You know, it's a whole show stage. But anyway, so then the owner of the car would give Exhibit the car keys, and then Exhibit would drive the car off to auto body shop, and the people that work in an auto body shop, they're called professionally customizers, auto customizers. So what they would do is, you know, they would analyze what's wrong with the car, you know, from paint to upholstery to engine to tires, the whole nine yards. And they would pimp it out. And for those who don't know what pimp it out means in modern terms, it means improve it. So they would pimp out the car, and it'll look brand new. I mean, it's like, well, just like the Nine Friends thing, the car would be brand new. You know, a lot of times we put a new engine in it, new tires, new upholstery, new paint job, different look to it. Same car, same frame, but that was Pimp My Ride. Then, you know, the person would come in, and then, like I said, the whole thing staged. But they actually did customize, I mean, these customizers, these auto customizers, and that's a profession. And auto customizing under the umbrella of auto body work is a profession. It's an industry. Okay. So a friend of mine, like, say, 12:30, 1 o'clock, it's only 1:30 in the morning, we on the phone chopping it up, and I know him from high school. And he bought a Pimp My Ride, and then that, bam, because I had in my mind years ago, I would like to do a housing version of Pimp My Ride, where, you know, we get a house. Now, you know, you got these flip shows and fix-up shows and self-improvement shows on, and it's all based around the house. Well, the idea that I have is essentially based around the person. So the working title that, you know, we came up with last night is Homeless the Homeowner. Now, that's not an original title, so that's a working title, but essentially we would take a homeless person or somebody who's near homeless, going to foreclosure, facing eviction, take that person and basically within a short period of time, teach them what they need to do along with a crew, and a la Nine Friends, their method, and help them participate in the building of their own house. That's the primary idea of Homeless the Homeowner. So, you know, just in the program notes today, I got one small step, which we'll have to work that in there some kind of way, and then the one-hour house. But for the one-hour house, we'd have to prefab some part. We would have to prefab the house. And anyway, but like I said, with Pimp My Ride, it was all staged. But, I mean, they did everything within a 30-minute, you know, TV show, and it went smooth. And like I said, you can watch episodes of that on. So that's where we're at, and that fits in to what we want to do anyway. All right, but I figure and this is just a working title. We might have a different title. Homeless the Homeowner, that's a good marketing strategy. And like I say, we're basing it on the person and not the house. I mean, the house is going to be involved. But we're going to base it on the person and educating the person on what they need to do along with a crew to build their own house. All right. And in our case, we're talking about a tiny house. All right. We're not talking about a 4,000-square-foot house. We're not talking about a 1,000-foot-square house. We're not talking about a 700-square-foot house. We're talking about something that's 399 square feet and below. All right. So, and off the grid, you know, houses that have solar that will generate, you know, electricity, maybe wind in some cases, wind power, growing food, you know, homesteading, that type of stuff. So I'll keep you abreast of that because, like I say, that idea, both less than 12 hours ago. No, just when he brought up the TV show, It's My House. So, and not It's My House, Pimp My Ride. So, we want to see what we can do with that. Other than that, you know, it's the February the 2nd. And let me share with you, I got a call from, I guess, a mentor of mine up in Chicago this morning. And he has a little routine where he goes to McDonald's in the morning. That's his de facto office, one of them at least, and an office away from his home office. And the McDonald's that he went to, the lobby was not open. The drive-thru was open, but the lobby wasn't open, and that's where he usually goes. And along with other customers that come there every morning. So, and take note, today's September 2nd, first of the month, first Friday of the month. So, found out that they didn't have enough people, enough employees did not show up to work this morning, they already got paid, to open up the lobby. So, all that was available to them was the drive-thru. So he and some other customers were standing outside waiting for employees to show up at this particular McDonald's. And this is, in this particular case, it's a McDonald's which is in a black neighborhood and it employs primarily black folks. And I just made a comment that we need to tighten up on this stuff or at least schedule things, maybe schedule, I don't want to put it on a race thing, where if people don't show up, you know, you got 3, 4, maybe 5 people as a backup in case people don't show up for a shift. Now, I don't know anything about the retail or restaurant business. I'm just saying. Because, see, you know, I was talking to another friend of mine this morning. Black folk in this country, we have really given up some lucrative ground that we took, in my opinion. Just my opinion. I'm just one person out of 8 billion on the planet. We took stuff for granted. We took very lucrative markets for granted, like landscaping. You know, and matter of fact, let me run down the numbers that me and my friend ran down. And in this one subdivision, you know, because during my generation coming up, you know, we cut the grass. So we figured just the black households in this one subdivision was 700 households. So, and we're talking about kids who played together to the same school, you know, with the exception of some private school people, birthday parties, the whole nine yards, and had just one or maybe two of us, or you know, everything starts one. One of us said, you know what, I want to get every black household in this subdivision. Now, we put the mark at 700 people. 700 black households. All right. And we're talking about black households where you had a black manufacturer that lived in that neighborhood, a black judge that lived in that neighborhood, black doctor. I mean, a nice, solid. It was the Huxtables neighborhood before the Huxtables. Oh, so they had the expendable. And they were spending money to have their grass cut anyway. So we just did the math on it, 700 times, you know, so much per cut, and with 700 yards, he would have to hire some help in the neighborhood, okay? But we came up with like over $238,000 on that. And then, you know, what about when the leaves need to be raked up? You know, another over $100,000 on that. And then, you know, for a couple of snows out of the year, shoveling that, you know, over $100,000 on that. And we even put the political thing in there because with that kind of cash flow coming in off of just one subdivision, and we have a rule between the neighborhood people who started it, and we're talking about just one or two people, and the homeowners, the black homeowners, you know, there would be understood that only people that look like us, that we identify, you don't let anybody outside of that cut the grass. And then when he brought that up with the identity, and don't let it, nobody that's outside of that identity cut the grass, then I thought about, you know, and one of the reasons why I play some of the clips off of the TV show The Wire is because if you look at the second season of The Wire, that's where they talk about the docks at the Baltimore Harbor. Well, I don't know how it is now in 2022, but at one time, the Polish community in Baltimore, Maryland, they had a lockdown on dock workers. They did have some non-Polak people or Polish people that worked those docks, Polish Americans. They did, and they had blacks that worked down there too. But the political structure, the number of dock workers hired were hands down Polish Americans. All right. And we totaled up over $700,000 was sitting, and we didn't include any numbers for inflation. You know, we based this on 1975 prices. Okay. Over $700,000 among those 700 houses in that subdivision. And that's just with black households. And that's not all of the black households, because we figured not everybody's going to jump on the bandwagon. So, and then, you know, if they franchise it, and such a simple idea. Such a simple idea. But, and I'm relating this to what happened, to the story I heard about the guy from Chicago at the McDonald's that employs black people in a black neighborhood. If we nap on opportunity, what, acres of diamonds, if we nap on opportunities like that within our own acre of diamonds, okay, because we napped on it, we lost out on the landscaping to a high degree in the black community. You got some black landscapers that are still out there, but overwhelmingly in a lot of markets, it's Latino. Housekeeping. We had a virtual lockdown on that, taking that over, and then you've got, and I know like in Silver Spring, Maryland, you've got some Ethiopians and Somalians. They've gotten in on it. They're behind the Latinos. But African-American, that bloodline, you hardly see any of us in that anymore, particularly on a corporate level. You know, because I see them zipping around. I'm up in that neck of the woods. I see them zipping around the Beltway during rush hour. And, you know, these Latino folks, they got their own, and Ethiopians, they have their, you know, they got their own cars, you know, with the company logo on it, with the paint job promoting the company, with their housekeeping services. We had a lockdown on that. If you go to a Home Depot, let's see, Home Depot, Menards, or Lowe's, you know, it's getting to be about lunchtime now. It's 11:33 a.m. where I'm at. So around lunchtime, you might see a station wagon or a van pull up or a truck pull up with a Latina in there, and she's got hot lunches ready to sell to the Latino bunch. She'll sell to anybody now. The majority of people that patronize her are the Latino dudes that are around for lunchtime that didn't get picked up, or they're waiting to get picked up to do a day labor job at Home Depot, Lowe's, Menards, or whatever. Some of them hang out at U-Haul, you know, for day labor gigs. But they'll pull up and they'll sell those lunches, all right. And they'll come back for the evening shift. You know, people going home picking up something to eat. So, and we had, that's something that black women had a lockdown on as well. So I'm just saying that the people that if you got those jobs at McDonald's or Burger King or whatever, all right, don't be cut. Because, see, what's happening right now in real time, you have immigrants coming over. I don't want to hear nobody talking about the Ukrainians are taking our jobs or the Lebanese are taking our jobs, okay, because they're coming into this country as refugees. And this is a basic tenet of entrepreneurism, regardless of color or race or religion. Find a need and fill it. Find a need and fill it. So if they see this McDonald's or this fast food place that is in need of labor, they're going to apply for a job, and they'll get it. I'm going to call the guy back this afternoon and find out what happened. I mean, did the lobby ever come back open? But they weren't there when he went there, as well as the other people went there. Okay, he walked, but there were people that drove there. I know this about human nature, regardless of race or color. When people are hungry and thirsty and ready to spend their money, they're not going to wait a long time on average. Particularly in a city the size of Chicago, because he stated, Burger King was in walking distance of that particular McDonald's. So, let's not give up our acres of diamonds. Because it's out there. But if we neglect that acre, or we don't recognize it as an acre of diamond, people will come along and snatch it up. So that's where we're looking at this homeless to homeowner thing. Because we were looking at how many of these agencies out here, man, are making bank. You got agencies out here making probably $500 to over $1 million a month off of homeless people, but did not teach them anything about house building. But that's a whole nother show. I guess they don't want it that way. All right, 619-768-2945. You got it. You know, like I said, it's open mic if you guys want to toss anybody in, any topic in. We're going to play Acres of Diamond, but when we come back off of this, let's see, we had a reparations topic. It's something to do with reparations. Was it blank versus reparations? I got to look it up. We'll be back right after this.
Back in the year 1843, a man was born who, during his lifetime, was to have a profound effect on literally millions of people. His name was Russell Herman Conwell. He became a lawyer, then a newspaper editor, and finally a clergyman in 1881. It was during this latter period that an incident occurred which was to change his life and the lives of countless others. One day a group of boys came to Dr. Conwell at his church and asked him if he would be willing to instruct them in college courses. They wanted a college education but lacked the money to attend. He told them he'd do all he could, and as the boys left, a thought, an idea began forming in Dr. Conwell's mind. He asked himself, why couldn't there be a fine college for poor but deserving young men? Here was a great idea, and he went to work on it at once. Almost single-handedly, Dr. Conwell raised between $6 and $8 million with which he founded the now well-known Temple University of Philadelphia. It was how he raised this money that I want to tell you about. He raised the money by giving lectures all over the country, more than 6,000 of them, and in each he told a story called Acres of Diamonds. This was a true story which had affected him very deeply, just as it affected his audiences. It was the story of a farmer who had settled in Africa. This farmer had heard the exciting stories of other African settlers who had made millions by discovering diamond mines. Realizing the African continent was rich in diamonds, the farmer could hardly wait to sell his farm and search for diamonds himself. He spent the rest of his life wandering the vast African continent, searching for the gleaming gems which brought such high prices on the markets of the world, but without success. Finally, in a sudden fit of despondency, broke and desperate as I remember the story, he threw himself into a river and drowned. During this time, the man who had bought his farm one day found a large and unusual stone in the stream which cut through the property. It turned out to be a great diamond of enormous value, and then he discovered that his farm was covered with them. It was to become one of the world's richest diamond mines. Now, the first farmer had owned literally acres of diamonds, but had sold them for practically nothing in order to look for them elsewhere. If he had only taken the time and study to know what diamonds looked like in their rough state, and had first thoroughly explored the land he had owned, he would have had the millions he sought, right on the land he had been living upon. What so profoundly affected Dr. Conwell, and subsequently thousands of others, was the obvious fact that each of us is, at this moment, standing in the middle of his own acres of diamonds. If we will only have the wisdom and patience to intelligently and effectively explore the work in which we are now engaged, we will usually find that it contains the riches we seek, whether they be financial or intangible or both. Before we go running off to what we think are greener pastures, let's make sure that our own is not just as green, or perhaps even greener. While we're looking at other pastures, other people are looking at ours. There's nothing more pitiful to my mind than the person who wastes his life running from one thing to another, like the first farmer, forever looking for the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow and never staying with one thing long enough to find it. For no matter what your goal may be, the road to it can be found somewhere in the work in which you now find yourself. It wasn't until he was completely paralyzed, for example, and was forced to reach into the resources of his mind, that a Wisconsin farmer got the idea of producing exceptionally good meat products on his farm, and one of the country's largest meatpacking companies was born. His farm contained acres of diamonds, too. He had just never seen them before. A paper salesman found a dirty drinking glass in his hotel room and gave his company the idea of manufacturing paper cups, an idea that solved his financial problems for life. An insurance man got the idea of going back to all the people in his files and really working with them, serving them the way they should be served. That year, he wrote an additional $700,000 of insurance, made the million-dollar roundtable, and found he no longer had to approach cold prospects, that by working with the people he had already sold and on their referrals, he had acres of diamonds right in his filing cabinet. A man out west amassed a fortune with a single small gas station. In the beginning, when things were tough, he would ask himself each morning, "What can I do to increase my service to my customers?" He still asks that question of himself each morning when he gets up, and while he could have retired years ago a wealthy man, he continues to dominate the business in his area by thinking of new and better ways to be of service. Do you know what the so-called average man would have done in this last case? He would have been worried about how bad business was, because in the beginning my friend had a hard time just feeding his family. When one day a man would have driven in the station in a big, shiny car, this average man, seeing the wealthy customer, would have said to himself, "I ought to be in his business instead of mine." You see, the average man believes some businesses are better than others, instead of realizing the truth that there are no bad businesses. There are just those people who do not know enough to see the opportunities in the work they're in. Jobs don't have futures. People do. No matter what our work happens to be, it's our business. We're its manager. If we can see no future or opportunity in it, it isn't because it's not there, but only because we can't see it. One time another farmer poked a tiny pumpkin into an empty 1 gallon jug. The pumpkin grew until it completely filled the jug and could grow no more. When it was ripe, the farmer broke the glass jug and had a pumpkin which had assumed the jug's exact shape. In life, each of us does a similar thing. We poke ourselves into jugs of our own deciding, and we can grow no larger. But let's be mature enough to realize that it is we who do the poking, not the job, nor the company, nor the territory, nor the economy, nor the times. We do it. We should dispense with limitations and realize there is virtually no limit to our growth and development on the land on which we now find ourselves. Above all, keep this thought in mind as often as you can, on and off the job. Somewhere within the work you are now doing, There lurks an opportunity which will bring you everything you could possibly want for yourself and your family. In closing, here are 12 points to remember. 1. If we will develop the wisdom and patience to intelligently and effectively explore the work in which we are now engaged, we will find it contains the riches, tangible and intangible, we seek. 2. Before we go running off to what we think are greener pastures, let's realize our own pasture is unlimited. 3. That there are no bad jobs, but that it's the way in which we go about our work which makes it good or bad. 4. That we poke ourselves into jugs beyond which we cannot grow. Let's remove the limitations we've set upon ourselves. 5. That only preparation can ensure our taking advantage of the opportunities which will present themselves in the future, opportunities which are around us now. 6. Put your imagination to work on the many ways and means of improving what you're now doing. 7. Learn all you can about your job, your company, and your industry. 8. Since there's no limit to the growth of your industry, it must follow there is similarly no limit on your growth potential within that industry. 9. Our dynamic and growing economy needs and will well reward the uncommon man who seeks a place in this growth. 10. Begin to build your library of reference material pertaining to your company, industry, job, and on how to better serve and get along with people. 11. Set aside an hour a day for this study and research. And 12. Remember the story of the Acres of Diamonds. Zero Nightingale, thank you.
All right. Hold it, wait. Okay. Today's podcast is titled Homeless, the Homeowner, One for a Small Step. But we're doing open mic right now. We ran through the Homeless, the Homeowner earlier today. And I just played Acres of Diamonds. And there's a... The two quotes that he just mentioned, Earl Nightingale, while we're looking at other pastures, others are looking at ours. And, I'm changing the topic, provided you guys want to bite at it. Acres of Diamonds versus reparations. That's the bone I'm throwing out right now. Acres of Diamonds versus reparations. And like I said, I just played the Acres of Diamonds thing narrated by, that was written by Russell Conwell, but Earl Nightingale was the one that just recited it or read it. So two of the things that Nightingale mentioned in Acres of Diamonds are, one, while we're looking at other people's pastures, others are looking at our pastures. And then another one that struck my mind, our own pastures are unlimited. Our own pastures are unlimited. So... And I happened to call a guy back in Chicago. I said, did they ever open up the lobby at the McDonald's that he usually goes to. They usually open at 6 a.m. The lobby is open at 6 a.m. at his specific McDonald's. But they opened 2 hours late this morning. 2 hours late. And... That's not a good thing. That's not a good thing. So I don't know the backstory on why it opened up 2 hours late. But once again, while we're looking at other people's pastures, others are looking at ours. Now, the topic I'm throwing out there, if you guys want to bite at it, is Acres of Diamonds versus reparations. With reparations... We have, and I'm generalizing here, you know, you guys can jump in. With reparations, you have people that want to go to state governments or the United States federal government and get parations, well, you know what? In what form, I don't know. Some people want a check. Some people want tax breaks. Some people want land. There's a whole lot of different wants there, but there's nothing official as far as legislation and law at this point, other than you're now on a state, on a city level in Evanston, Illinois, they have something there. And that's reparations. That's their definition of reparations, which from my understanding is not based on slavery, but based on whatever the local lawmakers came up with that in that city of Evanston, Illinois. All right. So the topic of reparations is complex because people have different definitions and, you know, different wants, needs, or what have you. But what's your take? If you have to pick one, Acres of Diamonds versus reparations. Because with Acres of Diamonds, you have to recognize the opportunity that is right beneath, right where you are. Now, that opportunity could come in your in some way in your environment. It could come in geographical environment, environmental environment, intellectual property, that environment. You have to recognize it, and then you have to harness it, and then you have to learn how to trade it for whatever you want to trade it for, including money. That's Acres of Diamonds. Because with the Russell Conwell thing, you know, you have to recognize, first thing you got to recognize what a raw diamond looks like. That's the first thing. And then you got to recognize, well, more than likely you're not going to find these just laying around on the ground. You know, you got to dig deep to get diamonds. You have to know that. So, same thing with oil or any natural resource. You know, you have to be able to recognize, you know, what that resource is or if it is a resource, and then what do you need to do to harness that resource, and then what do you need to do to trade it. Whereas with a reparations check, if you live long enough to get one, if that's the type of reparations you want, because in Evanston, Illinois, you know, reparations, according to them, might be a grant, a home improvement grant, or maybe a low interest rate loan. I don't know what the qualifications that, you know, that are required. To get that. Lastly, and I just heard this a couple of days ago, some people, as a matter of fact, if you're online right now, look up Adam Clayton Powell III. Adam Clayton Powell III. Look him up and take a look at his picture or pictures. Look him up, Adam Clayton Powell III. Now, he is, if we get like the Ados definition, American descendants of slaves, let's say there's reparations checks that are going to be cut for Ados people. Adam Clayton Powell III, he on a DNA level, on a heritage level, on a lineage level, Adam Clayton Powell III is deserving of a reparations check. To rub with some people. I just heard this 2-3 days ago in one of these clubhouse chats. Due to his complexion, there are people, black folk, they don't believe that he deserves, and he's Ados. He is an African descendant of slaves. Due to his skin complexion, there are us, darker-skinned Ados, that believe that he doesn't deserve a check because of his skin color. But he is a legitimate, if we go by the Ados definition, he is a legitimate, on every level, African descendant of slaves. So you got some. Anyway, where's the agreement going to come along? I'm just saying. Particularly what is his dad. You know, his dad, Adam Clayton Powell Jr. You know, he's one of the civil rights icons. Anyway, me personally, I'd rather go with the Acres of Diamonds. And I think a lot of people with, this is just my opinion, that want reparations. And that's why I like this quote within the Acres of Diamonds audio that I just played. While we're looking at other pastures, I think it's too many of us counting other people's money. Because if you're counting somebody else's money, if you're looking at somebody else's pasture, you're going to miss yours. Now, I'm going to name some examples of people that looked at their own pastures. Dr. Dre, with his headphones, billionaire. He wasn't looking at other people's pastures. Jay-Z, husband of Beyonce. He was looking at hip-hop as an industry. This is my lane, billionaire. Rihanna, from Barbados. She stayed in her lane, billionaire with cosmetics. All right. Who else is and these are first generation billionaires. Kanye West. All right. Call him what you will. First generation billionaire. These are people that they were looking at their pastures. Whereas the reparations people on a critical mass basis, they're counting other people's money, and they're looking at other people's pastures. The Ados crowd, they're looking at George Washington's estate. They're looking at Thomas Jefferson's estate. They're looking at IBM. They're looking at Ford. They're looking at Chrysler. They're looking at the Fortune 500. They're looking at other people's pastures, and while they're doing that, this is our lifetime so far. Every person that I just named, black, American, except for Rihanna, she's Bayesian. She's from Barbados. All of them are first generation billionaires because they recognize the Acres of Diamonds they were standing in. For Jay-Z, his Acres of Diamonds is hip hop. Hip hop is an unregulated industry. Headphones, Beats by Clay or whatever, with Dr. Dre. Virtually unregulated industry. Billionaire. First generation. I don't even think these people went to college. Well, if some did, not all of them did. All right. Kanye West. You know, hip-hop. Unregulated industry. That's his. He recognized his Acres of Diamonds. And they didn't have to go through no Senate subcommittee. They didn't have to hire a lobbyist. They don't have to try to get legislation passed. They don't have to try to bankroll any elections. They didn't have to do any of that. Reparations, you got to lobby. You got to bankroll elections. You know, you got to deal with every, I mean, although most people that want reparations are probably Democrats, But you're going to have to go across the aisle on this one if you want it to happen. And it's 2022. And you got some people, well, they're no longer living. It's 2022. And let's say 1863. Oops, I did that wrong. A 159 years. Because there were some people right after slavery, they're not living now. They wanted reparations. So some people have been waiting some people are looking back 159 years. Some people look back 400 years. Meanwhile, I would say that's why I choose Acres of Diamonds over reparations. What opportunities, because the other quote that I liked on what Earl Nightingale said is, our own pastures are unlimited. That's everybody. Every person listening to this podcast, regardless of color, regardless of religion, regardless of gender or sex, everybody's pastures are unlimited. I truly believe that. That's why I play practically every morning the Jamarion Styles, the kid with stumps for arms. He doesn't even have any hands. But he went out for the basketball team and made it. And then when he finally got into the game, you know, he scored 6 points. He made 3 pointers. He found his Acres of Diamonds. Anyway, let me get off my platform. So anyway, what do you think? Acres of Diamonds versus reparations. You have to pick one. You can't pick both. Me, I'm going with Acres of Diamonds. Even if you don't recognize it, just because you haven't recognized your Acres of Diamonds doesn't mean it doesn't exist. That's why the conversation I had with a schoolmate of mine this morning and former teammate in high school basketball, you know, he brought up the example of just in the subdivision that he came up in with the 700 black households, how much money, like I said, we counted it up, over $700,000 a year in one subdivision. And that's not what every household participating. But if we could have caught that, and that market still exists. That market still exists in every neighborhood. That's got, you know, neighborhoods there, because some neighborhoods are concrete. They don't have no grass. But neighborhoods that have subdivision, that they do have lawns. Something as simple as, you know, raking the leaves, shoveling snow. That's why I play those little Steve Harvey snippets. Cutting hair. Think about the, talk about Acres of Diamonds. And if somebody would care, you know what? I'm going to see if I can get a female on this show. I'm going to text one right now. Because I like to find out what's up with black women and nail salons. I bet you, and I'm just speculating now, and I'll go to the phone lines here soon. I'm speculating that somewhere in Asia, a place like maybe Vietnam and Korea, just like over here they have, I don't know if Anway's still around, but just like they have Anway meeting, opportunity meetings, and Mary Kay meetings, you know, when they come, you know, they show you the plan, so to speak. I bet you over in Vietnam and South Korea, there are people that are holding opportunity meetings on how you can go to America, go to a place like Baltimore, Maryland, Detroit, Michigan, you know, deep Washington, you know, someplace like that, St. Louis, Chicago. They're holding an opportunity now. You can go to these cities, and, oh, they're doing Zoom calls now, bitch. I know they're doing Zoom calls on this. And, you know, they're speaking Vietnamese, and they're speaking, you know, Korean. And they're talking about the opportunities, the acres of diamonds that exist in black neighborhoods if you do black women's nails. Or if you sell soul food to black folks in black neighborhoods. It's 2022. I know they're doing Zoom calls. They've been doing opportunity meetings for some time now. But I'm sure now they've stepped things up. And they get on their smartphones and their desktops and their tablets. And they're having opportunity meetings. They're coming to black neighborhoods to do nails for black women. You can challenge me on that if you want. But I bet you that's going on. So, as this quote, like I say, while we're looking at other pastors, others are looking at our pastors. While we're looking at a reparations payout by the federal government of the United States of America, Vietnamese people, Korean people, Chinese people, throwing the Japanese, Toyota, they've been looking at our pastures and getting, well, some, to be honest about it, becoming billionaires, to be honest about it. Hold on, I'm sending a text to this. I got to get a female. I'm going to get a female perspective on why these black women keep on going to these black, to these Asian, okay, let me see. I just sent the text off. I got to make sure I put the number in. Hopefully, because I don't know why. If anybody has an answer, press 1. We'll bring you up to speak. All right, hold on. I'm trying to get this female to call first. They might be busy. I need to do a show on that with a female panel. Yeah, hair care products. Now, kudos to Dudley Proline. I think Proline out of Dallas. Hopefully they have not sold the Proline company to somebody else. Johnson Products out of Chicago, I think that's still in the family. Hopefully it still is. Ebony Fashion Fair, I don't know if that Eunice Johnson passed on some years ago, so I don't know if they're still running Ebony Fashion Fair. They were a private label. They didn't really manufacture a product, but they were they had a private label, and they ran the Ebony Fashion Fair. Of course, Dudley Products is a manufacturer. And the Bonner brothers out of Atlanta, they're manufacturers. And you probably have some boutique black cosmetic manufacturers, you know, in various places around the country. But the shops like Sally's and other outlets, they seem to have a pretty much of a lockdown on acres of diamonds that we, well, anyway. So, okay, what? We're going to take a quick minute and 30 break. We're going to go to the phone lines. I'm just waiting for this call to come in, and then we're going to straight to the phone lines.
Just give me that countryside.
New York is where I'd rather stay. I get allergic smelling hay. I just adore a penthouse view. Darling, I love you, but give me Park Avenue.
The chores.
The chores.
Fresh air.
Times Square.
You are my wife.
I've been holding out for long. I've been sleeping all alone. Lord, I miss you.
All right, we're talking about Acres of Diamonds versus Reparations. Acres of Diamonds versus Reparations. If you had to pick one, which one would you take? Acres of Diamonds or Reparations? Now, we were talking about before we went to that musical interlude, Black Hair Care. And somebody sent me a list. Thank you, Sunshine. Of over a little bit over 30 companies. These are non-black. I'm about to name these. This is a list of non-black owned hair brands that are primarily sold to African American women. You have African Pride, Dark and Lovely, Soft and Beautiful, Alaska OP, Beautiful Textures, Protective, TCB Naturals, Smart Perm, Proline. Proline originally was a black company, but I guess they sold it to a white interest. Africa's Best, Aunt Jackie's, Texture My Way, Do Grow, African Gold, Atra or something like that. Black and White, Blue Magic, Ducharme, I might be butchering that. Five Star, Eight Gloss, Glovers, Just So, Nadiola, Worlds of Curls, Sulfur 8, Cantu, spelled with a C, Carol's Daughter, Shea Moisture, Let's Jam, Main Choice, that's M-A-N-E, Choice, and Africa Pride. These are all non-black owned hair brand companies that is sold to the Black Hair Care Acres of Diamonds. Anyway, which one would you pick? You can't have both. Acres of Diamonds versus Reparations. And I'll end my little rant on our own pastors are unlimited. Okay, 314. Your mic is open.
Man, I've been home since 10 o'clock.
Time flies.
Yeah, you only got 3 minutes to be on here.
This board's funny. Because I didn't see your hand at 10 o'clock, which would have been 11 o'clock my time.
You said that you were going to play something in 2 minutes, and that was about 15, 20 minutes ago.
Mm.
But, you know, the thing with hair, why do black women have to only buy from black people?
They don't.
Yeah, that's what they're trying to tell people. It's only a few folks, only a few voices that have a problem with that. These people trying to tell you they don't want to buy what you or some want them to buy. And that's been the case forever. I was reading about some businesses back in the 1600 black. And people then was complaining that blacks wouldn't buy from them. George Washington dined at a black restaurant in his day. So when the issue was the lunch counter, right? You remember the lunch counter sit-ins because they wouldn't serve blacks?
Yeah, I did hear that, and that kind of puzzles me to this day.
Yeah, blacks were sitting in at Woolworth and SS Cressy in order to get served. Now we hear people talking about blacks won't shop with black folks. What is it?
I don't know.
See, that shouldn't
be a conversation. What I don't understand about the lunch counter thing, this is me, 2022, or I wasn't around and when they were sitting at those lunch counters. But my thing is, why I'm not sitting at no counter ordering food from somebody that has explicitly put a sign in the window that they don't want me there. And that's number one. And number two, if they do serve me something, they might spit in the food or drink or whatever. And I'm not paying for that kind of service.
Well, that can happen in a black restaurant,
too,
right?
Huh?
That can happen in a black restaurant, too, right?
Oh, yeah. That can happen in a black restaurant, and people have done it.
They can spit in the food and have roaches in the food and everything else.
That's true.
So
Hold on, Pianki. I got a female here. I got to ask her this question. Viata, we have a question here. It's called Acres of Diamonds versus Reparations. But the question I had to ask is this. In your opinion, why do many black women patronize Asian nail techs and not their own?
Oh, my goodness. That's a good question, I guess. Well, for one thing, convenience. I know in my neighborhood, that's all they have is Asian. I used to deliver magazines to places like that, health magazines, in fact, to places like that, because they have magazines for people while they're waiting to read. And that's all that were in the neighborhood were Asian nail places. So I don't think it's like they're trying to avoid black-owned. There are none. In the neighborhoods I've traveled in, and even the one, in fact, the interesting thing is, in my neighborhood, there used to be a ice cream shop owned by a black couple. They used to make homemade ice cream. They closed it during COVID. And guess what opened up? A black-owned nail place. I just saw it the other day, and I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. You know, I don't do that. I said, at least it looks like, I don't know, it looks like it because I saw black people in the shop. So in my neighborhood, they're starting to shift that ownership thing.
All right. Well, now you're originally from Chicago, all right, and Chicago's demographics are dramatically different from Orlando. So but same thing in Orlando. I mean, in Chicago, why are the majority of black women who do go to nails get their nails done? Why are they going to Asian? And it is because there's no shortage of black women in Chicago that do nails.
Again, it's for convenience. You know, I used to live on 47th in Chicago, and there was a Chinese restaurant that we patronized almost every night. We loved that shrimp fried egg foo young, and they did a good job of it, and it was owned by Chinese people. We didn't give a care about who owned it. We just loved our Chinese food. So,
okay,
I mean,
well,
whoever is in the neighborhood.
Now, you say convenience. All right, let's stick to Chicago and black women and this nail thing. The majority of black women who have their hair done, their hair did, all right, 25% have their hair done. They go to a shop, and they have their hair done by another black person because there are black men that sell here too. Or 75% have their hair done at somebody's house.
Right.
So that's black women patronizing black women. They have their hair done. Y'all won't let anybody touch your hair. However, when it comes to the nails, it's a different story. If you can go to somebody else's house for hair, why can't you go to somebody else's house for nails?
I just said the only answer I have is it's convenient, L.A. People are not going to drive out of their way to get their nails done. They're going to either choose someplace near their job or their home. They don't drive. In my opinion, I don't get my nails done and my toes done and all that. That's not me. But from what I see other women doing and talking about on Facebook and all that, they going to go after work. I got to get my nails done, the shop around the corner. Or I'm going to go near my house on Saturday. I got an appointment. They're not going to go out of their way to get that done. They're going to go where
they're going. Well, what I'm saying is the same house where they get their hair done. All right, I get the comfort and the convenience part about it, but I'm saying there's got to be on the south side or the west side of Chicago, there's no shortage of black female techs that can do nails inside their home. But for whatever reason.
Okay, so you need to.
Now I know you don't do it. I know you don't.
Yep, you need to. I don't know. There may be more black women doing that now since COVID. There may be more women who started that kind of stuff in their home. But even that, I remember a woman who was doing something in her home and somebody snitched on her and they were trying to find her and telling her she couldn't do so. Oh, I know, it was braiding. She was doing hair in her home, and they made a big deal out of it. I say, think you had that woman on your show. Yeah, you.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. She's down in Dallas, Texas. Yeah, I got her. I got to call her. I ain't talked to her in years.
Yeah, so she.
Somebody told on her.
Yeah, she would be the type of person to set up nail care in her home since she already has the business.
Yeah, because her thing is braiding.
I think that would be. That would be a great
combination. I haven't talked to her in about 4 years. I need to call her up. That's an excellent guest. Thank you.
That would probably be a great combination business to do the hair and the nail all at the same time in the house. But, again, depending on where you live, they might have some rules and regulations they're going to try and throw at you and get more fines and money out of you. So you have to be smart and wise about it.
Well, I'm not suggesting anybody go to somebody who's unlicensed. I'm just saying it's interesting that black women on a critical mass basis, not all of them, because you're not into that at all, but that they have they won't allow nobody non-black to do their hair, but they'll go to the Korean place and have their nails done. So I don't know what the distinctions are. I don't know. You got any comment on that?
You know why come black women's hair don't grow long? They got to put artificial hair in there. Because they are of the Negroid species that comes off the equatorial zone. And the sun is right above the head. And you ever notice the soft spot in the top of your skull? You ever feel that? Put your hand up there and see if you feel it. You feel that?
It's not as soft as a baby's, but I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Well, that's where your body releases heat. Your body releases heat in several different passages. Your nose, your mouth, and to some extent your ears, but up at the top of your skull is where heat from your body releases to the atmosphere. Well, if you're on an equatorial zone where the sun is directly overhead, you go grow short, peppercorn, kinky hair so that you can release the heat. So if you start wearing, let me finish now, I got to say. If you start wearing a lot of hair on your head, then you're complicating your biological systems.
Now, can I speak?
Yes.
Okay, so that. There are a lot of exceptions to what you just said. I have several friends who have locks down to their butt. They've been growing hair for all these years, and I keep saying, why don't you cut your hair? Nope, can't cut my hair. So there's an exception to what you just described, and it's for the most part, you do see a lot of women. Not just black.
You hear what
through.
I said.
I'm not through. They're not just black women who are in that category you just chose for them. But there are white women, too. There's just so many women wearing false hair, you can't even count the number of women who are doing that. But black, there are a lot of black women that I know, not a lot. I'd say at least 10 that I know who have locks down to their butt. So some of them are more conscious
about that's not a natural thing, though. I think Pianki, correct me if I'm wrong, Pianki.
Thank you, L.A.
Pianki was talking about the natural biology of things.
That's not what I said. I said that Negroid women that hail from sub-Saharan and equatorial zones, hair don't grow long like you see people with these weeds on, and they don't grow long like you see these locks. They don't do it. It's because the sun at the equator is directly over your head, beating down on your skull, and it caused detrimental effects. That's why nature made them like that. White women, women that you say from Mediterranean, they stay up in the northern areas where they don't have sun directly over their head, and that hair actually is a remnant of fur because it was used to keep it warm, keep the heat in their body.
So you're talking about women in the African area or in that zone?
I'm talking about the yes, and the black women here is this. Do you say, what do you say, L.A.? Ados? What do Ados mean?
African descendants of slaves.
Where did the slaves come from?
Africa.
On the equatorial zone. Them slaves did not have no long flowing hair.
But you
he's talking about the biology of it.
Women in America have learned to grow their hair by locking it. Even if they did have original kinky hair, some of them have trained and are taking care of their hair in a way that it grows quite a bit. Even though they come, their ancestry is from Africa, they still have trained their hair to grow.
Well, what they're doing, they're mutating. That's called mutation. When you do something other, when something occurs to you other than your original biological makeup, that's a mutation.
Well, you got a lot of us who have mixed blood. Are we from Irish to Mexican to German? You name it. Our Native American women were sleeping with all kind of men and making all kind of women or babies that didn't have strict African blood. So that's why I think you can see a difference in the hair in everyone who has dark skin, people who have dark and light and even lighter skin, because we've been mixing things up for the hundreds of years now.
It's
so
called mutation.
It's called mutation.
Then they no longer ADOs, right?
Oh man, I don't know the difference. I don't know. Some people, like I say, some people that they think that Adam Clayton Powell III doesn't deserve a check because he's light skinned. All right, I got another call here. 410. Your mic is open.
I don't know whether I want to get it. I don't know whether I want to get
in it now.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, well, we can hear you.
I don't know whether I want to get in this conversation or not, but look, Hotep, everybody. Brother L.A., you know what? Sometimes you scare me. You really do. And your boy scares me all the time. And don't mute his phone, please.
Now, hold on. What scares you? The title, Acres of Diamonds versus Reparations?
Yeah, you
okay.
Really scare me. And the way you phrased it, because you said that black folks are busy counting other folks' as shit.
I did say that.
And you say you would rather we pursue acres of diamonds instead of reparations.
I thought I heard you say that. I say look for the acres of diamonds.
Uh-huh. Brother L.A., see, you're suffering from... You're a victim of slavery, and we went over this a few shows ago. You're a victim because look, all through black folks' existence here in the United States, everybody has told black folks, stay in your lane, know your place. And the thing is this, and I sent you a couple of texts. I don't know whether you looked at them or not. See, black folks have always mined their acres of diamonds. Always. But see, other folks have come in and taken black folks' shit. And if they can't take it, they'll come up with all kinds of ways to connive and fool them out of it. Because they count black folks' shit. But see, you're telling us not to count other folks' shit. Case in point. You brought up the Koreans coming over here and setting up beauty supply houses and stores and everything else. See, they counted other folks as shit. They said, you know
they
what,
did.
There's a lot of money. There's a lot of money over there in the black neighborhoods that's not being, and they're not serving their women's needs. See, they counted our stuff. We didn't go in and control our environment. So they were able to come in here and basically take what we ignored.
because they're counting our shit. See, you're telling black folks, stay in your lane, don't count other folks' stuff, which means that, see, when you are practicing capitalism, the foundation for capitalism is you only succeed when you take other folks' stuff. Socialism, communism, all them other isms is based on counting other folks' stuff and taking it. See, but you're telling black folks, don't you count other folks' stuff. We're supposed to count other folks' stuff, and we're supposed to take it. We're supposed to compete for it. Now, that doesn't mean that we ignore our market. We're supposed to control our market and take other folks' market. But you're telling us, don't do that. Now, on this other thing, the only reason you, people like you and conservatives are against reparations is because you know white folks ain't going to give it up without a fight. And we are scared to go in and fight for it. See, the thing is this. When you're trying to get justice, you're supposed to fight for it. That's just like them people going over there for accommodation. Yeah, it was wrong for those civil rights leaders to go in there and ask for accommodation, use restrooms, water fountains, and eat where they want to eat at and all of that stuff, and not go in and try and control where you stay, your neighborhood. Control the markets in your neighborhood and take other folks' markets if you can, where you can. That's what capitalism is all about, brother. And the thing is, there's nothing wrong with pursuing reparations while you mine your acres of diamonds. You can do both, and you're supposed to do both. But see, when you're a victim, like you are, and other conservatives and liberals, black liberals, see, we're supposed to stay in our place. We ain't supposed to compete for other folks' markets. We ain't supposed to fight for justice. We're supposed to just take it and lay down and go ahead on and whine and complain. But that's where you scare me at. Because, see, you're telling us, you're looking at George Washington stuff, and you're looking at Thomas Jefferson stuff. We supposed to study that to see how they came in and took what they wanted. See, before the white man got here, the Indians owned all this stuff. They saw other folks' shit. They saw that there was some value here, and they took it because that's capitalism. And we're supposed to do the same thing. But see, when people like you that are afraid of their own shadow, that stops us from building an infrastructure of businesses to not only control our markets, but take other folks' markets too. And that's where you scare me at.
Now, Beasley, does capitalism say that you have to take somebody else's stuff? Case in point, with Tuskegee Institute, if you look at the history of that, they built their own buildings, and they had to learn how to make their own bricks. They had to learn how to make their own nails. So that was capitalism, and they didn't have to go out and take anybody else's stuff.
Yes, they did too. Now look, you need to study that again.
What's his name? Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington do Tuskegee? Whose stuff did he take? They had to make their own stuff.
He took a market away from the people that were building bricks, and he sold bricks to white folk.
Yeah, he did. Selling bricks to white folks is nothing wrong with that. All right,
okay,
so I'm talking about he made stuff, but he
that's
didn't
right.
go in and. Take any. I mean, the market was there for him to grab hold of. I don't
think
he
did.
He didn't take it away from anybody else.
Let me tell you what I did.
Okay, let him go ahead.
I took business from other steel erectors and made my piece of pie. See, people talk about that, but they ain't never done it. I've done that before.
And I've done it too.
Pianchi, all right, hold on. We're going to come to you in a minute. Pianchi, could you explain, give us your definition of how you took business.
I went in there and took business. I put out more numbers after building the project on paper and knowing what I was doing to come in with more realistic prices and took it. And by the way, my nephew scored 2 touchdowns yesterday. Look at the Sports Illustrated. Burden shines, defense makes plays at Missouri Tigers, roll L.A. Tech in season. The kids are going to be worth about $200 million.
What's his name again?
So that's how you... Burden, B-U-R-D-E-N.
Burden Shine, okay.
Luther. Burden, yeah.
Okay.
But see, that's...
but
that's
you didn't get to the stuff. I mean, you did it with a bid. You didn't go in and, I mean, threaten, extort, kill somebody. You didn't do... See, that's... I guess we had to define
If that's what you got to do, that's what it's got to be done.
Right.
Thank you. Thank you.
But Beasley?
You know what?
Don't be thanking me. Next thing you be doing is cursing me.
No. You know what? Sometimes even a broken clock get the time right twice a day. And
Now,
Beasley, you said you've taken... Well, Beasley, give us an example where you took something. I want to hear your definition.
The same thing. The same thing that Brother Pianca said. Look, when my father built our business, a retail business, a country store, he did it because crackers made him mad. And he said, you know what? I ain't got to take this. He went out and built the store from the ground up. And we competed against the white businesses in the area. And we took their market. We closed up one store because we were open all the time because we gave good customer service and we had good prices. And the thing is, at that time, black folks weren't supposed to be in business. But we took that market. We took our portion of the market, white and black. When I moved to Baltimore...
Let me tell you what happened. Let me tell you how me. White males made me very wealthy.
Thank you. Made me wealthy.
That was my workforce.
All right, what I'm talking about, in neither case did y'all extort, bully, you know, none of that Godfather stuff. That's what I'm talking about.
If somebody made a mistake and I had to work it, I charged the hell out of it. I had to rework it, I done a project that a black guy was the fabricator, and his stuff was messed up, and we had to repair it in the field. See, when it come out in the field, it's supposed to be right. But if I have to make repairs on it, I'm gonna charge, and I charge you heavy.
All right, Beasley.
And brother LA, look. You don't understand what you're hearing. Now, I'm going to give you another example. When I moved into Baltimore, it was Koreans and white folk in the area that were selling in a black neighborhood. Well, the thing is, I competed with them, and you know what? I got my portion of it, and I got some of their portion of it too because they knew they couldn't beat my prices in the times that we opened in customer service. Now, I'm going to give you another one. Now, since you brought up extortion and threats and all of this stuff, I know a fellow that was running numbers in Brooklyn. And the thing is, I'm not going to call that fellow's name. There was two of them. And they got stinking filthy rich. And I asked them, I said, look, how can you control Brooklyn numbers and the mafia's here? And the thing is, you out here running and you're making money hand over fist. You know what he told me, Brother L.A.?
Okay.
And I'm just a rhetorical question. He says, you got to let another MFR know that you can hurt him just like he can hurt you. And the thing is this, they know better than to come in our territory because they know when they come in here, they're going to get their ass kicked and kill if necessary. This is our territory, and we're going to defend it. And you know what? Those two men children is living off their generational wealth now. Now, that's an extreme point. But he said, look, the mafia can't come in here because they know we're going to do the same thing to them that they try to do to us. And he said, you know what? We can get a portion of their territory. And they did. They ran them out of Brooklyn. But now, getting back to where you are, see, Farrakhan said it best, business is warfare. And the thing is, you got to go in and you got to be competitive. That's what competition is. They say competition, but competition is only welfare, competing against somebody else. And what you said earlier, it hurt my feelings because I know you're supposed to know better. That's why come black folks ain't got businesses in their neighborhood. Because, see, back in the day, white folks would come in there and intimidate them and burn them out and run them out of town and everything else instead of them defending what they had. And the thing is, Honorable Elijah Muhammad said it best. He said, you don't build a business if you can't protect it. And we're scared to protect it because of people like you. See, the thing is this. Reparations, when you go out for reparations, you're going to have to fight. And you know what? You might have to kill to get reparations. And that's
what you seen that seaport that I designed?
Yeah, I saw it.
I sent you the cover on it.
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah, that's another example. That seaport is probably going to go to $2 to $4 billion. So you don't beg and plead in order to get a deal. You got to go in there and do what you got to do. Kick butt.
Well, this takes it to a whole different level. We're not going to get in that today.
Well, look, brother,
I'm listening, Beaver.
Before you go, I want you to remember this day that, you know, Brother Pionk and I can agree on something. I better watch it, you know, because something bad might happen. The world might come to an end.
well,
you've been taking
I agree with
what
you.
Whatever you got, you got
to protect it. You got to protect it. I do admit that.
But I want to make one thing about the Koreans. See, the thing why comes Koreans control hair products because they make them. They make them. They go and negotiate with Indian women and the other supply, and they do what they have to do with the other areas of hair care, even the cosmetics. They make them. They put them on their ships, send them here. They have their own custom brokers that check them through the ports. They warehouse them, and then they have their own trucking system to distribute them through points in the United States. They control it. They put white side of it, especially out there in California. That's what you got to do.
Brother L.A., look, I hate to cut across Bianchi, but now listen to what Bianchi just said. And I want you conservatives to think about this, and liberals, black liberals. Black folks could take over the cosmetic market in the black neighborhood in 5 years. And I'm going to tell you how they could do it. They could go in with their politicians, if they were black enough and they had an identity, and say, you know what, we don't want anything else coming in here as far as black cosmetics coming in here from a foreign country. And I want you to pass a law and put strict tariffs, everything that comes in here. And in the same time, why are you looking at other folks' shit now? At the same time, you build up your manufacturers, because we got black manufacturers too. And you can say, well, look, we want to make sure that our black manufacturers of black hair care products to protect it. But see, you can't do that without an identity. See, you can stop the import of foreign goods in here several different ways. And you can make sure that only your products are protected because it's an internal market. But
right.
See, when you don't have identity and you don't fight for
you
it,
you can
go ahead on and suffer the way we suffer. But see, and
you can manufacture those goods over in Africa with cheap labor. Then
sure
you can bring them back into the United States under the African Growth and Opportunity Act, which permits you to bring things into the United States and not pay
exactly.
any tariffs and duties.
Exactly.
But
see,
LA,
But see, if you're thinking like LA, but see, if you're thinking like LA, you're still a victim. Okay, and I'm through.
I'm going to end it there for today. We'll pick up this on another day. Everyone have a good weekend.
I'll be able to have lunch with you, dude.